This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 85 of What's It Like. My guest is Shannon Morse, actor, director, host. Anything else I should add to the list?
Producer and store manager.
Ooh. Well, that's quite a long list. Hey, Shannon, where are you?
I am currently located outside of San Francisco, California, in my office.
Ah. Did you grow up there?
I did not. I was a military brat, so I moved around the United States my entire life until after college when I moved to Virginia and joined Hack 5. Then eventually we could afford to live in California, so we moved out here.
Did you come from a large family?
I have a little brother and a little sister, and then my mother and father. My father's side of the family has a lot of brothers and sisters on his side, so lots of aunts and uncles. And my mom only has one brother and sister, so not too many on her side. But I have lots and lots of cousins that I have to try to remember the names of, and a few aunts and uncles that I haven't seen for several years, but I try to remember them as well.
A cast of thousands, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
When you were moving around, did you have a favorite childhood possession that you took with you wherever you went?
My My Little Ponies. Oh, no, I have a favorite possession. I just remembered it. And I still have it to this day sitting on my bed, which is a little embarrassing given that I'm 26. I have this stuffed animal from the Jungle Book. His name is Baloo.
Oh, yes. Stuffed how fun. Bear.
It reminds me of when I was little. It was one of my favorite movies, the Disney movie. And my mother took me to see Disney on Ice, the Jungle Book. And the entire time, I was only like 4 or 5 years old, and I was screaming, Baloo, Baloo, in the middle of the audience. Probably embarrassed the heck out of my mother, but afterwards, she brought me down to the front of the ice rink, and I got a picture with him, and I still remember it to this day. It was my favorite moments in my life, and eventually, she got me that little stuffed bear, and I keep it. As long as it'll last, I'll keep it.
Well, yes, of course. You know, the older you get, the more endearing it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Who had the biggest influence on your life when you were growing up?
Probably my father. I've always been really interested in technology. And when I was little, although my father wasn't always there for my family due to his, he was an alcoholic, so he wasn't always the fatherly figure that I wanted to look at. But he always had a computer in our household. And he loved to play video games on it, and he loved to do spreadsheets, and he loved data analysis and all this stuff. And every time that he figured something out on his computer, he would go, oh, hey, Shannon, come here. Come look at this. And he would show me it on his computer. And when I was younger, in my teens, he built me my very first computer. And the entire time I got to watch the entire process, and I thought it was so cool seeing the insides of a computer and how when you put it all together and if you get it all right, it'll boot up this amazing machine that you can do pretty much anything on.
What was your major challenge as a child?
Probably the moving around.
Mm-hmm.
Given that we were military, we moved around 5 or 6 times when I was growing up. And each time I lost the friends that I had. We didn't have Facebook back then. We didn't have Twitter. We had a phone, but long distance costed money. So, So every time we moved somewhere, I had to basically go over to people's houses, knock in their front doors and see if they had kids, which I literally did.
Hi, I'm Shannon. I just moved in.
Exactly. Yeah. My mom told me that when I was a little girl, when we moved to Indiana from Alaska, big move there, I went around the neighborhood, and if I saw little kids playing in the front yard or the backyard, I would go knock on their door later on in that day, and I would say, hi, do you want to be my friend? I just moved. That's how I made my friends when I was little. It's very friendly.
Good training.
Yeah, exactly. It was very good training. Very good for networking and communicating with people online and such.
Yeah.
So it helps.
So since you moved so much, what was school like for you?
It was hard as well. I think the hardest time for school for me was when I was in middle school. I had moved to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and I stayed on Fort Wood and went to that middle school until I was in sixth grade. And then all of a sudden, my dad said, hey, I'm going to retire here. We're going to move about 20 minutes away to a different area. And I had to go to seventh grade at a completely different school. And this is the time when, you know, you're in your teenage years and you want to make your friends and you want to figure out what you want to do with your life. And you're trying to meet boys. At least I was. So I moved to a new place and had to go to the other middle school in the district. And it was hard for me to make friends there. And I discovered very quickly that I was one of the dorkiest girls at the school. Luckily, I did make some friends that enjoyed the same things as me. But it was still hard for me to make friends because I was the new girl at this middle school. People already knew their friends from sixth grade. And they didn't want to make new friends in seventh grade, and it was tough.
Mm-hmm. But you survived childhood.
Yes, I did. Somehow I survived. I'm not really sure how that happened, but yeah, I survived.
Surviving is a good thing to do.
Yeah, well, when I was in high school, I discovered my real passion. It was theater and choir and entertaining people and just being able to talk to people, because I love talking to people. You know, I did it when I was a little kid, walking up to the neighborhood houses. So when I was in high school, I joined all the entertainment clubs, the creative clubs, choir, and I was a thespian. To this day, I'm a thespian. What? And I also joined a computer class. I loved them. Loved all three of them. They were super fun. And then when I went to college, I tried out for the theater major.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get in. I guess they didn't like me.
Aww.
I know. But my friend and I got to talking during my freshman year, and we said, hey, for some reason, both of us really enjoyed working and our little minimum wage jobs at the restaurants where we were, and we said, hell, we should go into restaurant management because that would be so much fun. And now I look at it and I'm like, yeah, 60 plus hours of work every week in a restaurant or a hotel managing 40 plus people. It's like, nah, maybe not. Maybe I should go back to what I really enjoy, that theater passion that I had. That geeky debauchery that I've always enjoyed.
How did you decide which college to go to?
It was a local one. Mm-hmm. My father, he was very financially stable growing up, so he always gave me financial advice and advice as far as going to college. He was the only person out of our family that had been to college. My mother never went. So he said, hey, go to a local college in the state. It'll be cheaper, and I'll help you pay your tuition and your books and your dorm and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, great. Okay, cool. So I ended up joining one of the state colleges. It was Missouri State University.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, they had plenty of different kinds of majors for me to choose from. A lot of my friends ended up going there, which also led to me joining that college as well. And they had a Domino's pizza, and I really wanted to get a job at the local Domino's because that's what I was used to. I continued working in the restaurant industry for many, many years.
Well, at least you know where to go to get something to eat.
Exactly. To this day, I can still go home to my old neighborhood and walk into the Domino's and say, hey, Justin, how's it going? Can I make a pizza for myself? That's one thing that I'll never forget, how to make a pizza.
So what did you do after college?
I ended up, during college, I ended up getting into podcasts. I started watching a lot of them online. Actually, it was an ex-boyfriend who introduced me to my very first podcast show that I really enjoyed to watch. And I found out that it was very easy to get to know the people who created those podcasts online. They weren't like, you know, movie and television celebrities where you can never talk to them and they have some kind of publicity person that will say everything for them. So I ended up finding the guys of Hack 5, started chatting with them, and eventually they invited me out to Virginia to visit. And then after I graduated from college, I ended up moving out there, and they said, eventually they told me, hey, you should be on an episode of Hack 5, and I was extremely embarrassed. I thought, I don't know if I can do this. My first episode of Hack 5 is horrible, by the way. I didn't know what I was doing, but they thought it was really cool to have this girl on the show who understood technology and who really liked to play video games and who was looking for something to start a career in. So they offered me a room, and I ended up moving out there and rooming with the guys for 2 years till we could eventually afford to move out here to San Francisco.
Hmm. And you're still with Hack 5?
I am still with Hack 5, yes. We didn't, when I first moved to Virginia, we couldn't afford just doing Hack 5 on its own. We didn't make any money off of it. It was just a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hobby that all of us enjoyed. So, you know, it was a fun thing for a bunch of friends to do. And eventually, we joined Revision 3 so we could afford to, you know, pay our rent, a little bit of beer money from the show. But I was working at a bank at the same time, and that was a lot of fun. Although I don't think they very much enjoyed somebody doing a hacker show and working at a bank.
Well, as long as you're on the right side, it's okay.
Yeah, that's what I told them. The first day I worked there, they looked at me and they said, oh, you're the little hacker, aren't you? And I was like, hey, I'm on your side.
And now you have a studio and lights and cameras and everything.
Yeah, we do. We ended up moving out here, and we've been, you know, trying to get our names out there and trying to grow the business, but still stay kind of that homegrown feel for our show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what people really enjoy, is the fact that we're a homegrown show. We started the show, well, my co-host started the show, I think, in his living room with like a backdrop that was a bed sheet stuck up to the wall. So eventually, yeah, we moved out here, and we were able to afford new camera equipment, and we opened up an online store to help us pay for the rent and whatnot. And it's been a decently profitable business, and it's been very fun. Hmm. I mean, this is I love doing it. It's so much fun. I think it's really what my passion has been for many years.
Mm-hmm. So what do you sell in your store?
We sell t-shirts for Hack 5. We sell a lot of electronic equipment, things that can be used for penetration testing, which is when a person would go into a company, and if they are legally obligated to hack into that company, they'll use these tools to aid in those penetration tests.
Hmm.
So things like that.
Mm-hmm. What's the best thing about your job?
Meeting new people.
Mm.
I love the fact that we're able to go to conventions and we're able to talk to other people that are in our kind of genre. People that I can really speak to on a very techie basis, or other people that really love video games.
Mm-hmm.
People that enjoy to do podcasts like me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wasn't able to do this, I wouldn't have met people from the UK. I wouldn't have met people from, you know, Ireland and Italy and all around the world. You know, I've made friends from these conventions and just from talking to them online, who are so passionate about what we do. And they just love talking to us and just geeking out. And it's so much fun. Like, I've made so many good friends through this show. I wouldn't take it back for anything.
What's the worst thing about your job?
That's a hard question. I honestly love it.
Is it hard to have the cameras or the lighting or anything in the production that's difficult?
It was hard when I was starting off, because I had never done anything in front of a camera, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I had always worked on a stage for choir and theater and such. So when I first started, I was very nervous, and I didn't know how to speak on a camera. I didn't know how to act. My expressions were huge because I had learned from theater that you want to do your expressions very large and you want to speak very loudly. So I probably came off kind of weird and awkward on there, but which I'm sure I still do because, you know, theater never leaves you once you do it. But I think now the hardest part would be probably the store. I love doing it. It's very fun. But at times it can be a daunting task. For example, I was out yesterday because I threw out my back, which happens now and then. You know, I used to work in the restaurant industry lifting 50-pound boxes of pizza sauce and whatnot. So sometimes I'll come into work the next day and there'll be 50 orders that I have to fulfill or 25 orders or whatever. And it can take a few hours. It can take quite a few hours. So it's very hard to make sure that I keep on top of it and make sure that it always gets done. Because if it was up to me, I would much rather, you know, hire a temp and be in front of the camera all day.
What type of person would be good at your job?
Somebody who likes to talk. Somebody who really enjoys what they do. Somebody that really likes to break something apart and figure out how all the insides work. And someone who likes to put things together and make them do things that they normally wouldn't. I could give an example as the Nintendo Wii. One of my favorite things that I've done in the past was hack it so that I could download a brand new channel and be able to download people's video games that didn't necessarily go through Nintendo to be authorized to be used on the Nintendo Wii. So I was able to play video games that nobody had ever heard of. It was very, very cool. Basically, yeah, just somebody who really enjoys the tech industry and hacking and doing interesting modifications to electronics and such.
If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
I would say a typical day would be I sleep in. I go into work about the same time as the guys. My coworkers, Darren and Paul. Paul's our editor and Darren is the, I guess you would call him my boss. He's the guy that created Pac-5, so anytime I have a question, I go to him. But yeah, I come in every morning. The first thing I do is the store. So I take care of any emails. I take care of any problems that anybody had with an order. I ship out all the orders. And we generally get, you know, a few UPS, a lot of USPS orders. So I have to do like two different things there. And then I start researching for an episode. And the interesting thing about our show is that we do everything behind the scenes. You know how a lot of shows, they have an editor and they have a producer. We do everything combined into one. So we research our own segments. We have to test our own segments and make sure that everything works. We write the segments and then we get in front of the camera and we explain it to an audience in a way that's understandable. And then we all edit it. We write our show notes for the website. And we produce it, and we put it online, and then we market it. So we put it on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. So that there's a lot that goes into it. I don't necessarily do everything in one day. Obviously, we only come out with one show a week, so I'm not recording every day. But that's a general overview of what I would do, I guess you would say, within the week.
Mm-hmm. Do you do a segment then every week?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yep. And my segments usually last maybe 5 to 10 minutes long, I would say, around there.
Do you have teleprompters or do you make it up as you go?
A little bit of both. We have incredibly cheap teleprompters that are actually just it's an iPhone app and an iPod or iPad app that we downloaded. It was like $10 or something like that. And then we have these mirrored images of the iPad onto our camera that face out towards us so we can read at the same time during an episode. You may see us, actually, this is a little bit of inside information. You may see us tapping our finger on the table. That's actually us tapping our finger on an iPad. to make the teleprompter go up and down. So,
next.
Yeah, we'll put bullet points on there so that we know what we want to cover and we don't forget everything. But we do have a lot of improv that goes into it as well.
If one wanted to, how would they get a job like yours?
Networking. That is the most important part about getting into this kind of field of work. Networking and finding your passion. If you want to do a show and you don't necessarily love what you do, it'll come off through the camera. People will know and they won't watch it. And another thing is, if somebody does start a show and they only get about 3 episodes in, keep doing it. You're not going to make any money like the first year of doing a podcast. It just doesn't happen. But you just got to keep doing it. Like, if you really, really love it and people like it and they send you like maybe 1 email a week or something and they say, hey, really cool show, you know, keep it going. Do it. You may only have, you know, 10 viewers or something like that on YouTube. Who cares? Do it anyway. It's fun.
Shannon, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
I have a decent work ethic, but a lot of times I do get lazy. A lot of times I'll wait until the last minute to do a segment, and then you can tell on the camera when I haven't done much work on it. So generally what I'll do is I'll put off lunch until maybe 3 p.m. or 4 p.m. and make sure that I get everything done before then. Or if I have some kind of goal that I want to reach, like, I really want to go home tonight and go shopping with my girlfriend, I'll say, okay, I can't do that until I get this done. And I'll make sure that I get it done, or else I won't reward myself with going out shopping or what have you.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
When I have to soothe myself. Yeah, I am a pretty hyper person. I do eat a lot of candy. Don't eat candy. That's how I soothe myself now. I would say playing video games.
That's what Veronica Belmont says.
Really? Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. It's not necessarily anything to do with our show, because our show's about hacking. But I love playing video games, and a lot of times I'll find that if I need some time, if I need a break from something that I'm doing, I'll boot up, you know, my most recent obsession is Skyrim. I'll boot up Skyrim and go through a couple of quests, and then afterwards I'm like, all right, I feel like I accomplished something, but I also feel like I took some time off and I was resting in my chair. I was getting a little bit of work done with Skyrim. Ha ha ha. And it helps me calm down.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Ooh. Probably moving to Virginia.
Mm.
It was my very first move where I was moving away not to join a college or not to be moving with my family. And it was very hard knowing that I was moving out of state to, it was a good 1,500 miles away from home. And I was moving to a place where I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any family to come home to. I had these, my 2 roommates, or I guess it was 3 roommates back then. So I had these 3 roommates, these 3 guys that I had met pretty recently, so I didn't necessarily know them from years and years of being friends. And it was very tough for me to go there to make new friends, especially because I was, you know, in my 20s now, and it was a little awkward if I was going to walk up to somebody's house and say, hi, want to be my friend? So I couldn't necessarily do that. But I was able to make some friends through them. And it was also hard for me to find a job because, you know, the job market's been utter crap lately. And I basically had to go with the most minimal pay thing that I could find because nobody was hiring at a decent pay rate at the time. So, it was hard to step out of my norm and go into something that was completely different than what I was used to.
Is there an idea or principle that helped you through your challenges?
I would say maybe not a principle, but a person. And my mom helped me a lot. She's always been very supportive of everything I've done, even if it was a wrong decision. She's always just been a phone call away, and she's always told me, hey, if you ever need anything, just give me a call. If you ever want to come back home, I always have a room for you. If you ever need anything, I'm here. And if I didn't have her, I don't think I would have been able to accomplish everything that I have. You know, I'm not a millionaire or anything like that, but I feel like I have been, I've done very well for myself, and I've accomplished many of the goals that I've set for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always been there for me. So, yeah.
How did your father's alcoholism impact you?
It was very hard when I was little. Well, maybe not little, but when I was in my teens, it was embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
I would have friends over, and he wasn't physically abusive or anything like that. He was just not there for us. He would just go off and, you know, go in the yard, and he would mow the lawn or something like that while he was drunk, and he was never there to be my fatherly figure. So I never had that person, that fatherly figure take your daughter to work day. I never experienced that. I never experienced the go out and fly a kite with your father type thing. You know, I never had a guy to throw a football around with, my dad. But so it was very tough growing up, knowing that I couldn't go to him every day for help. I had to go to my mother, hence why she was always there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was very hard during my teenage years, because my friends knew what was going on, but none of us really had the courage to go up to him and say, hey, you need to go to classes, or you need to take care of this because you're ruining your family, or anything like that. You know, it was just not something that a daughter, that I felt that I had the willpower to do, to go up to my dad and say. It was very hard.
Well, it's not your responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when I was little, I felt like it was my responsibility.
Yeah. When we're little, we think everything's our responsibility.
Yeah, very true.
Does it impact you now at all?
No, it doesn't. He went through some very troubled times. He ended up going into a hospital, and he's much better now. And so I think now that he's sobered up and he doesn't drink like when I was growing up, he's trying to be there for me.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of conversations on the phone. He's moved to California, so he's just a couple of hours away. And he's living very nearby his mother, or not his mother and father, his aunts and uncles, or my aunts and uncles. So since he lives so close to everybody, not only am I able to regain that friendship with him, but I'm also able to regain that connection with my aunts and uncles, mm-hmm. who I lost a connection with while I was growing up.
Oh yeah.
So it's been a lot better now. It's been very helpful.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would be your best advice?
Follow your passion. If you don't, you'll regret it. When I went to college, I thought my passion was restaurant and hospitality administration. I thought it was, but it wasn't really. What I really found was my passion. I found in high school that doing that theater and that choir, basically, if I look back on my life and I think about the moments that made me happiest, it's usually those moments when somebody gave me some kind of praise for my work on stage.
Mm.
Or when my mother came up to me and gave me flowers for my good job acting in a show. I once had a lady come up to me, and it made me feel so good knowing that I touched her so well. She came up to me and she said, that song you sang was so beautiful, you made me cry in the middle of it. And I was like, oh, that is so sweet. And it made me feel so good that I was able to reach out to somebody like that. And I must have made her think about something that made her, you know, made her feel like she did, because she cried during my song. Like, I never thought I could influence someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
So follow your passion, or you'll regret it.
Mm-hmm. So are you going to sing more on Hack 5?
I hope so. Now and then you'll hear me belt out a tune during the bloopers at the end of the shows. But I do have some friends who do this thing called nerdcore, which is a type of hip-hop for nerds. Mm-hmm. And there's been a couple of occasions when they've asked me to sing for them, or they said, hey, I think you're a decent singer. Do you want to do a compilation together? And I've said, yeah, sure. It hasn't happened yet, but I hear the songs are in the works. So I really hope that, yeah, I would love to do some more singing. And I would love to find a theater group in the area that I live in now that does, you know, theater for the public. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a high school theater group like I used to be in, but you know, somewhere that I can join with some adults and be able to go on stage and entertain like I used to, because I love that kind of stuff. It's so much fun.
I want to thank Shannon Morris for joining me today. Thanks, Shannon. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That was fun.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.